This is the Pratfalls Podcast, a show that features conversations with creative folks about the work they make and the life they live. The show is part of Noise Picnic. Go to noisepicnic.com for other great Twin Cities-based podcasts. This episode features my conversation with Lynn O'Brien. Lynn O'Brien is a musician. She's a board-certified music therapist. She is a general force of positive musical energy out in the world. I was first connected to Lynn through the Giant Steps Conference, one of my favorite things that happens in Minneapolis every October. You should go check out Giant Steps to find out more about that. I talked to Lynn about a lot of things, about making her work, about her background in music therapy, and about the year of transition that she's just coming out of, really pushing a focus on her music career. I really liked having this conversation. I think you guys will enjoy it. And if you do like it, hey, share it with some of your friends, right? Promote the show. Be awesome. You're my hero. All right, that's silly. Let's move on to my conversation with Lynn. You're Lynn O'Brien.
Yes.
First things first. Nailed that. I'm curious how you talk about, like, you're a musician. That's, like, cut and dry. Mm-hmm. But my listening to your work and then just reading a little bit about your background and the other parts of at least your public life, it seemed like music is a thread through all of them, but I wonder if you think of it more broadly than just a musician. Mm. Like, how do you think about what you are and do as a creative person?
Mm. Great question. I would say music is my vessel, or it's just my vehicle in the world. So music is one of the ways that I get at connecting with myself and other people and kind of doing my part in the world, or showing up, or letting life flow through me, or if you want to get spiritual, it's spreading my light. But it is just a part of my purpose, which is offering what my soul is learning in a creative, playful, intentional way to other people in a format that I think will have a high impact. And that's what music has kind of become for me.
It's a way of offering your experiences or what you know or trying to understand.
Yeah, and in deepening my connection with other people, I think music is an amazing language that disarms us and connects us and creates community. And so throughout my life, music and art and dancing and lots of art forms have been a way that I seek out community and that I really feel like I can see somebody else and appreciate who they are, because I can see who they are really fully expressed in their art. And so my goal as an artist is to really share myself vulnerably so that other people can feel connected to me and my story too.
I think there's something really interesting about that idea that you can be more honest or more yourself with an art form than just being, than just like in conversation or something.
Yeah.
Is that sort of kind of what is that part of your experience? Is that, are you intentional about that idea?
Yeah. I mean, I try to be honest as much as possible. And also, writing songs has just been a way to kind of realize what's going on with myself. I'll write a song and then later I'm like, oh wow, I knew that on a deeper subconscious level.
Yeah.
Or I was more comfortable expressing in that way. And you know, when I sing, I have no idea who's in the audience, but I'm willing to just totally go there and share what feels vulnerable. It feels safer. Mm-hmm. Or like, I don't know about you, but sometimes I'll feel like if I'm addressing a large group of people speaking, I'll be more comfortable if I sing at the beginning of the speech, or if I just could sing or like rap or something what I'm talking about, rather than having to speak, because singing is so much easier.
You feel clearer when you do it? Like you can make your point clearer almost?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have this weird thing where I'm more comfortable on stage than off stage.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not even whatever version of usually some comedy thing I'm doing, but whatever it is, it just, for me, a lot of it is because the relationships are really clear. Mm-hmm. I know what the expectations are.
Oh, there's
no vagaries about what's supposed to be happening.
Yeah.
And I do think I can be open and try to make a connection, and it feels less scary than in a room with someone and you're trying to connect and you're like, this could go any wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I'm curious about is, I know you've got, is it a fair amount of experience with music therapy or something in that sort of area?
Yeah.
I don't know. That can mean a lot of things. So I'm curious what forms that takes for you.
Sure.
If that was intentional, or did that just happen, like how you got, how your music came to take the shape of
overtly helping people or helping people process things.
Yeah. Well, I grew up, my folks are musicians in Central Illinois, and my dad's a chiropractor, and my mom volunteered with hospice, and they're both very healing-oriented, people-loving people. So as a family, sometimes we'd volunteer with hospice or go into nursing homes and sing four-part harmony, and that was kind of the way we connected as a family. And growing up, I really started to see the ways that music could make a big difference, and would write pretty empathic songs towards classmates or friends growing up, or it was just a way for me to process things that affected me emotionally, or a way to comfort other people through writing songs for them. And then when I was in high school, my grandma had Alzheimer's, and I would go visit her nursing home often, and a way to connect with her through the progression of her Alzheimer's was music from her 20s and 30s. So I would learn and play those songs and would see such a response from her and the other residents. And around that time, I learned about music therapy, that it's a field of study, it's a degree, it's a certification, and you can learn about the psychology and science behind music and how it affects the brain and body. And I was like, that's the one. That is fascinating. So then I pursued music therapy as a degree while doing informal things like creating internships or volunteering in nursing homes or schools or different kinds of places, with the intention to do it therapeutically, but I was not trained as a music therapist. And then finishing my degree, I moved up here to do the 1,200 clinical hours that are a requirement for completing the bachelor's degree before you can do your board exam and get your certification. And it was at that time that I was officially a board-certified music therapist and got a job doing that.
So was that... That's a lot of things to do.
Mm-hmm.
And were you parallel thinking you were building a career as a musician and building a career as a music therapist? Were those parallel, or were you not sure one or the other gets the most attention?
It felt like I was building myself, or you know, just kind of all in one. I really enjoyed music therapy, and everything I learned about music therapists informed my night and weekend life as a performer and songwriter. So they were always kind of hand in hand, and even though the performances I do are not music therapy, they are inherently therapeutic, and there's an intention to empower and help people connect to the music, and I am using some of the knowledge I learned from that. So they've been really complementary over the years, and in the last few years, I've made some decisions about what parts I want to prioritize right now, because you really can get burned out trying to do both, which was the case for me.
They both are really personal things.
They are, yeah. And I think for a lot of music therapists, you really, well, at least for me, I really started hearing every song as ways it could benefit other people. And I kind of forgot how to go to shows and hear songs and be like, oh, I'd love to learn that for fun. And keeping that part of your musical identity going is really important when you're working as a music therapist.
Yeah.
So that's been something I've been really reclaiming over the last year.
Just the sort of play and...
Yeah, the play, the pleasure, the fun of it.
Yeah.
And the part of me that's an artist that looks at other artists who feel the inner freedom to just claim, oh, I'm doing this project because I thought it'd be really cool and I'm working on this, and it's about their own ideas. And so I'm really getting back to, oh, what is it that I have to say, and what would I like to explore beyond what do I think would help? What would really be fun for me as a
Right, because like you said, you don't know who's going to be in the audience.
Right.
So if you're thinking about everything in therapeutic terms,
right,
they're going to connect with it in
Absolutely.
Ways you can.
Yeah, and whatever's true and fun for me is going to have benefit for the people around me. So I've just been... kind of re-looking at my relationship with music and creativity. And I think there's lots of ways to keep doing therapy in a balanced way. But right now, I'm not active in that. I'm kind of I still feel really supportive of the field, but I'm not working directly in it, which is a good fit for right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you find yourself accidentally doing that for people just in your social life? You know, and maybe you just are that kind of person, too. I think the people I know who've worked in sort of creative therapeutic fields have I don't know if it's excessive empathy, but something where you guys are sort of open feeling everything everyone's feeling all the time, almost where it can be heavy on you. So I'm curious if, because you're not you're not somewhere regularly practicing that work, mm-hmm. if you find yourself pulling in people's feelings when you're just around them. Or maybe that happens regardless.
You know, I'm an empathic person, but also there's like so much that you learn around boundaries, and I do feel a really strong sense of boundaries and about what to take on and what role, and I'm certainly not a therapist for any of my friends or... So I feel pretty good about that, and I... Yeah, I guess that's all I can say about it.
No, and I don't need to try and, like, how is this a problem? That's what I want to get at. Can I hear a little bit about the writing journey for you? Were you writing... It sounds like you were writing songs. Mm-hmm. You mentioned writing songs, like, about friends when you were young. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty normalized because you had music in your house mm-hmm. all the time.
Yeah.
So do you feel like being a professional singer-songwriter mm-hmm. as a job was perceived as a normal, realistic thing when you were growing up?
Oh, that's a great question. Yes, I think I had a very supportive family of whatever I wanted to do. Mm. And I don't think I was ever like, I'm going to be a professional songwriter, but... I did know.
Declare it when you were 15.
Right. I did know that this was something really fun that I took seriously. And songwriting was a major form of expression and just a lifeline through my through my life. From when I was always figuring out songs, and I'd hear things in Kmart or off the radio and go home and figure them out or try to add on to them. And when I was around 9, I started writing songs regularly. And then sharing them more and more from the time when I was 17 on, and seeing the impact of that was just a really gratifying experience for me. And as an adult, now it's so funny how just the joy of writing music when you're younger and you don't care and you're writing a song about this bag of potato chips and now you're writing a song about this guy on the bus, and how your brain as an adult gets a little more like, oh, do I really want to write a song about that? Or what would be better than that? Or what do people want to hear? What's album worthy? Or... you start to, or at least I started to, put a couple constraints on my creative process instead of just seeing what's really there the way that kids so can do. So that's been a little bit of a shift, but I'd say songwriting as a profession has been really joyful, especially both personal songwriting for pleasure and also custom songwriting for businesses and organizations and people who would like their story expressed in song. That's been a really fun part of my work.
Yeah, so you'll meet with folks and craft something. So like a wedding or like an event like that, you actually write a song for some. How does that process go?
Yeah.
Is it always the same or does it depend?
It's always different. Yeah. I'm trying to streamline it, you know, actively just to make a bit of a package that people can understand, because I think people are like, what? Write a song for my...
We'll just figure it out.
Yeah. Right. And so I'll meet in a brief series where I'm really getting to know the person and what their musical preferences are, like a music therapist would. It's so important that the music sounds and feels like what a person enjoys and their motivation for wanting a song, whether it's we're getting engaged and we really want a song that captures this time in our life, or we're having a new baby, or we're an organization that could really use a theme song to be presented at this banquet, or... whatever it is, kind of learn the motivations and musical ideas. And then some of the words, I'll ask for just words and ideas and concepts, and then form a draft with lyrics and music and feed it back and see how that feels and we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah.
So.
Is there any tension for you in writing that kind of music versus writing a personal song for your own, you know, that you might record for an album or something? You know, I know a lot of writers, I know a bunch of really creative writers who also do like copywriting, and some of them see it all as part of a whole, and some of them very much are like, right now I'm writing ad copy for this thing. But it doesn't feel the same to me as writing a one act play or whatever. Do you think of them as in sort of different buckets, or do you think of them as a bigger, all part of the same thing?
I'd say I see them slightly differently, just because when it's something I'm just purely writing for myself, there may be more creative expression, or like I care less about if the lyrics make sense to everybody or how it sounds, as much as like, oh, I think this would make a great package or a great sound to a song, or I think this lyric would really hit that population well, or I'm certainly writing it from my heart, but also to offer a service and a product that will please. So,
well, it seems like this is my rephrasing of what you said. Tell me if this makes sense.
Yep.
But you're thinking of audience both times, but the way you're thinking about the audience is different. There's some very clear expectations from a corporate or private customer or client.
Yeah, it's about meeting the goals.
A listener, just of your art. You're just trying to connect with them, and they can pick if and how it connects.
Yeah, and I often ask my clients with that to name three goals. Like, if you could have people leave after hearing this song, what are three things you'd love to hear them say? Or how do you want them to feel after they experience this song? And people usually really know that information, even if they feel like, I don't know the first thing about making a song. They usually know how they want it to feel.
Yeah.
Or generally what they want it to accomplish. And I really love working within a, you know, having a couple weeks to write a song that really matches those goals. Whereas with my own stuff, that could take years or could be on the back of a napkin at a bar or there's just much less product around it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and if writing for you is also processing how you're feeling and what you're feeling, you don't know what the goals are. There's sort of a nice clarity if a client says, hey, I want to evoke these things, that's great.
Yes.
Instead, you're like, there's this looping rhythm in my head and I need to turn it into a song, but I really don't know what I'm trying to evoke right now.
Right. And with my own stuff, it's kind of just following the idea and trusting and following that inspiration. And some of that's happening with clients. It's like, okay, I have 3 weeks. Okay, Muse, can you help me out? Can you make it happen? But it is a different approach. And I'd say there's just a lot more intuition and openness and less expectation with my own process.
Do you think the private writing for somebody specific impacts your efficiency in any way more broadly? Like that you know you're doing that, knowing you have 3 weeks to write a song, then you know when you're working on something else and it's for you, you could push and turn it around faster. Do you ever put that urgency on your own work, or are you able to let it just breathe and sit?
You know, unless I'm like actively working on an album or have deadlines for my own stuff, which I rarely do have my own deadlines, it's kind of just something that's always building and I trust it in its own rhythm to develop. It actually helps me stay productive, to be accountable to other people. And I love the structure that's built in with offering a service, because then I will definitely write and produce a song within 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Otherwise it could take forever if it's just for me. You know, no one's looking. So I actually really benefit from that. And a lot of times that will inspire me to then go be more productive on my own stuff. So for me, I like the balance, but I think there may be other artists that have a really big agenda for their own stuff and that could get in the way. But for me, it's actually really helpful and seems to feed my personal process as well. And just to see people's relationship with music and how motivated they are to feature a song is pretty inspiring, because I think there's a real hunger in the business world to insert more creativity and music as a means of engagement. So I like to see that, and it just gives me more ideas about how I can do that with my, you know, my audience. So.
Do you have thoughts about the idea of done? Like, everyone I know who makes music, I think any kind of creative thing, you know, the way I run a theater company and we make very collaborative shows, which means night to night we're tweaking and playing and changing, and the show's never really like, this is the final script. And I know that's true with performing musicians. So I wonder about your thoughts on when you put something on an album.
Yeah.
How do you know it's time? And then is it ever really finished then?
Yeah. Yeah, I know I've worked with artists who are always revamping old songs, and I feel like I know one of their songs, and then next time I hear it, it's totally different. And I don't know if it's a lazier approach, but for me, it's like, once it feels pretty much complete, I'm like, good, let's call it.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to put it on an album, I really need to be sure it's done, but I might write one more verse as I'm recording it and then record it that day, and then it's done. And I probably won't revisit it. If I was playing it in a context where a couple of the words didn't fit, I might tweak it in the moment, but I kind of like to churn out songs and have them be done rather than be working on them for a long period of time. And then it's also interesting with that word done, because once I release an album, those songs are immediately like, after a year passes, I'm like, oh, that's so long ago, you know? And then there's this other category of improvised songs. So sometimes I'll be at a show and I'll improvise something and people say, oh, make sure to put that on the next album. And I'm like, oh, no, no, no. Like, that's just an improvised thing. That's not done, you know?
I don't even remember what I did.
I can't recreate that. I don't want to.
Yeah.
And so it's funny because I think people are so hungry to capture that live energy. So I've been thinking about doing an improvised album or just a live feeling album. But once songs are in an album, to me, it almost concretizes them, or it's
codified. Yeah.
Yeah. And it feels like a snapshot or like a photo album from that moment in my life. And then I let it be and I'll promote them some, but a lot of times I'll release an album after I've really saturated myself in those songs and I'm ready to move on. Then I'll release the album into the world. Hmm. And there's been other albums where I think the more efficient way to do it would be to make the album and then want to go promote those songs instead of like, oh, that's so last month that I released that.
So you tour the album first and then release it instead of releasing and touring.
Right. Yeah. So I'm just kind of looking at things like that.
So you're terrible at business.
I'm the worst. No. I think I'm learning, and I think, you know, now with it as my main means, it's always been a side business, and I really just did it from a place of intuition, and connections always seemed to form, and it just flowed, and now I'm putting a bit more intention into it. Like, with my next album, I will be doing some kind of crowdsourcing Kickstarter for it, and putting together a band and a specific strategy for after the album launches, and it will be a very different approach than my other albums.
Yeah, well, so you made me think of like seven things, so that's great. We'll see if I can track them.
Okay.
One of the artists I saw you've got a relationship with is Ellis, who I really like.
Yeah.
And she has done some really cool things of really building a long-term relationship with her audience where they are excited to support her work in ways that are different than just buy my album.
Yes.
But some of those ongoing like Patreon kind of, you know, investing in me as an artist and then trusting that I'm going to find cool things that are going to inspire you and keep making stuff. Some of it will be music and some of it will be different.
Yes.
So I'm curious if you're even thinking about the way the music industry in particular, but just creative work in general is changing and the way you can connect with people. Is that sort of the things that you're looking at as you put a little more energy into your artistic work?
Yeah, it's definitely part of what I'm considering. And I think Ellis is amazing. And she's someone who brings her full self, just every part of herself, to her performance. And so it makes sense that people feel connected to her whole self and want to support her whole self. Yeah. I do, you know, and just learning about her and her family and her approach to her work. The bit that I have been able to over the last year or two has been really inspiring. And that idea of Patreon has been in the back of my mind. And I think with where I'm at right now, I feel much more comfortable offering a specific service or album.
Totally.
You know, and it's all about that, like, the art of asking, right? The Amanda Palmer book about, well, let me make sure I have something to offer you instead of just asking. Because who can just ask for help, you know? And so receiving is a big part of my world right now. Yeah. And I have a career based on other people's generosity and interest in what inspires me. It's an amazing thing. So I am brainstorming a lot of ways to engage and to really give and receive in ways that feel whole for everybody.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Ellis is definitely an inspiration in that.
But that stuff just feels a little scary to me. Like, I'm playing in that space a little more of, can I just ask people to support me and not feel like I'm... I don't know. I don't know what if it's just fully cultural. Like, we're taught not to, you know, you make the thing first and then you...
Right.
Maybe still give it away, which was always my idea.
Right. And it shows just a ton of commitment to being an artist.
Yeah.
And to saying, hey, this is what I do, and I welcome you to support me on my journey. And I think for me right now, I'm reevaluating, like, hey, part-time work that's not related to music or therapy sounds really great, and then I could sleep at night financially and then do what I do in a way that's fun and I can be more selective and
just make your own decisions fully.
Yeah. Or I think right now where I'm at, I'd rather go get a job and work and have that part of my life be structured and balanced and offering different skills and building different relationships outside of that world. Cause I really like the variety versus being into the music full time. And if that was my intention, then I might look at Patreon or something. But for right now, I feel like I kind of want to bolster myself a little bit before I really get back out there.
This is a weird question. I don't know if I've ever asked anybody.
Okay.
What do you think of as your skills? Like, do you have in your mind? Like, honestly, I don't think I've ever, certainly not. Like,
well, it's relevant because I've been doing all these part-time work interviews lately.
Yeah. So, what's your resume?
Yeah. Tell me about your goals.
Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Right.
Do you have an idea of, like, a list of your skills? I asked because I was, as you were talking, I was like, I don't know what I... I know I have skills. What are they?
In any certain area?
Yeah, or... I'm really curious if you, you know, whatever it is, you know, project management. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, sure, I can come up with some. I'm good at things.
Sometimes you try too hard.
Right. I would say that, yeah, you love that one. It's like, what are your areas to grow? And it's like, kind I care too much. Like,
yeah.
I would say, actually, I do love managing projects and events. I love hospitality.
I love
making people feel welcomed, whether that's having people over for tea or having them over for house concerts. When I worked in the hospital, I was on different committees outside of my work in therapy just to brainstorm and come up with creative ways to help people feel welcomed when they come there. It's a real passion of mine, and I think I have a knack for coming up with creative ways to delight and invite people into space.
Well, and if you have that sort of intuitive empathy, you can also get a good read on this person needs something. You know, that is so important in any hospitality work, where you're like, okay, something's off in this room. Let me figure out what energy thing is happening.
And making shows a part of that where everybody feels, you know, like they can express themselves too is really important. I don't want it to be a passive experience.
Right.
Let's see my other skills. Back to my skills.
This is amazing.
I can...
It's going to be the new... This is all I'm going to ask people from
right now. Just totally catch them off guard. Yeah. Be like, what's your work history?
I need three references.
If you toss grapes underhand, I can catch them up to 47 in a row in my mouth. Okay. I have an uncanny ability to just center and catch.
Now, have you worked this into any of your live concerts?
No.
Give the audience grapes.
Oh my gosh, that would be hilarious. I will do that.
Oh boy.
No, I have
not. True connection then.
Yes, right. I know how to get things done. I know how to keep a sense of lightness when things get serious and stressful.
So I want to, okay, that, I mean, I love you listening to your skills, but that, one thing I noticed in your music and even talking to you now and sort of, I don't know, the themes even of like your website, you know, I certainly am guilty of reading into things all the time. You seem like there's a lot of joyousness and a focus on positive things and expecting the best, maybe if that's okay to say. And I'm curious about, is that, did you work towards that disposition? Is that your natural inclination? How even does that look for someone who would be working in music therapy where you need to keep that sort of lightness and not let things get too heavy, but also have to create space where some things are not awesome.
Yeah,
sometimes.
You have to be with it all for sure.
So I'm curious how much you've done to cultivate that or how much of that is just who you are and how you are.
I'd say I grew up in a, you know, a pretty harmonious family with parents who are both positive people and grew up with a lot of sense of you can create your life through your thoughts. And so I've generally been a positive, anything is possible kind of person. But through studying therapy and through just exploring my own, like, I'm a person with an ego and with darkness too. And I remember in college, I went to Toronto for a jazz festival and a woman played a set and I noticed all her songs were positive. They were all jazz standards, but she happened to find the very few that are positive.
Yeah, because that could be down note music.
Yeah. And afterwards I went to her and I said, hey, I noticed you're playing only positive songs. Can you tell me about that? And she said, well, I have a chance to have my voice heard in the world. Why would I not want to spread a positive message? And I thought, oh, that's really interesting. And I write music about it all, but specifically this last album, Light Everywhere, and my mission for these last couple of years, it's really felt right to offer music as a way to heal and empower, because I think music has so much power to do that. And so part of it is my personality, but also the music is the other half of it that just does the work, you know? So I know that in music therapy, you kind of view the music as the co-therapist, that it's it's half you, but it's half the music, and you just get out of the music's way, and you set up a situation where the music can work its magic, and that's how it is with performing, too. So I'd say I've been mostly positive, and I've had to explore a lot of darkness and change within myself, and I really appreciate artists who can bear it all. Who it can be the whole picture.
Yeah.
And so I've been joking with friends that my next album will be like Darkness Abounds, or like, you know, that it'll be like the other side of Lynn O'Brien and
what happened to Lynn?
Right, right. She went downhill. You know, where I love singing soulful music and I love writing sassy songs, and that's more of what I've been doing lately. And I also play uplifting music, but...
Well, in a ukulele, it's hard to be a bummed out.
Yeah. I've actually specifically tried to write dark songs on ukulele.
That is a real challenge.
Right, right. I think concerts that can hold it all. I mean, I love to see people cry and laugh in the same show. Mm-hmm. And I love to hear people who are really doing hard work and being with that and just having a good time sitting next to each other or being the same person in one show. And I think that's really good art. So I value it all, and I'd say my focus for positive music is an extension of my personality overall. Yeah. And what I intend to bring into the world.
Well, you can't be that sad if you're catching so many grapes in your mouth.
Right.
That's just going to stay. That's an upbeat.
Yeah. Cheers me up every time.
Yeah. If you're down, just throw a grape at you. Is that a good strategy?
Yeah. Underhand.
Right. That is important key. I know you mentioned the improvisation. You've done a bunch of that stuff. I know you work with like a looping board.
Mm-hmm.
And you've worked with Bobby McFerrin, who's sort of a preeminent improvisational vocalist.
Mm-hmm.
And artist and sort of just delightful human.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the things I was sort of thinking about, and there's a great video you made of just you, but doing the looping, and one of the pieces of that kind of work is you're harmonizing with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Which is literal for what you're doing there, but often is, I think, pretty metaphorical. Mm-hmm. A thing people are trying to do all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of balance, which I think is really tricky, but being in concert with your own self.
Mm.
So it seems like you're actually literally practicing that thing in your music.
Mm.
And I wonder if that, does that center you?
Mm.
Does it cause any challenges in trying to connect with an audience while you're trying to connect with yourself in several layers? You know, what is the dynamic for you there?
Oh, I love how you said that. I would say I love harmonies, and I grew up singing harmonies, and that's just where I feel most comfortable, would be singing harmony for somebody else or having a lot of vocal harmonies densely together. Mm. And
is it just the feel? What do you love about it?
I think it's amazing biologically that humans have vocal folds and flaps and vocal systems, and that we can somehow figure out how to create similar sounds and then complementary sounds based on music we've heard ever.
Yeah,
It's amazing to me. It's like a wonder of the human body that we could ever sing notes at the same time in the same way, or that we could harmonize just intuitively. And growing up by ear and singing harmony by ear, it's real hard to sing in unison when I could just grab a harmony. So I love to meet people and play with people who also have that just vocal nerd impulse to harmonize. So I'd say I love to sing with other people, and when that's not available, I love to offer harmonies to myself. And I almost always hear vocal harmonies. Whenever I'm writing something, the first part of an arrangement I hear is, ooh, there could be harmonies on this part, or I hear other voices. So the loop station is a way to express all the voices in my head, kind of. So it's very satisfying, and it's in some ways it's, after I practiced enough that I didn't struggle with just the mechanism of pressing it at the right time and the preciseness of that, which can still be challenging. I wish I could beatbox. But until I can, being able to immediately have the instant gratification of hearing those harmonies, and that they're so quickly available and they can be expressed so quickly available, and that it seems to be something people get a kick out of, is just fun. So it feels really natural to loop as a performance.
And do you feel like the audience is still accessible? They're excited because they're enjoying process as well as product in that moment?
I think so, yeah. And I'm really aware... sometimes if I need to, I'll try to keep the looping pieces short because I'm always aware of like an audience's attention span.
Mm-hmm.
And also I personally wouldn't feel comfortable doing a fully looped concert because sometimes that can just get like, okay, we get it. Now she's going to do the next part. Guess what? 10 seconds past, she's going to do another part. And that's wonderful, but that's why I try to bring multiple instruments and just keep it moving and do up and down songs and do, I like to keep the variety going, and I want the loop station to be like this delicious flavor you get every once in a while, rather than like, we get it, you like to hear your own voice, and now we're all hearing it so many different times. And so I like the variety, I think.
Do you do a bunch of improvisation with other other musicians and performers? Are you able to to have experience doing that regularly?
Yeah. The folks I play with are really friendly to that. I know for years I've played with Steve Hobart, who's a just ridiculous piano player and great person. And he's a master improviser, and he's always ready to play. So even if we're playing a certain song and then I go off on a brand new tangent and a new key, he's just right there, and he's really agile as a musician, and he's always ready to improvise, which is fun. And then there's a cellist I play with, Jessica Cheadle, who is really solid in holding it down, but she has a great ear as well. And so a lot of times maybe musically we're keeping things the same, but I'll start improvising a lot of lyrics or storytelling or something to pull in the audience, and she helps keep just kind of a steady rhythm going so that I can play over the top of it. And then there's these two gals I sing with, the Hummingbirds. We call ourselves the Hummingbirds as a trio. And they are incredible vocal listeners and singers. And when we get together to, you know, play different songs, we include an element of improvisation where we just start from silence and we just use our voices. And 20 minutes later, we've created all kinds of hills and valleys in the music. And we have maybe no intention of what the message is or what the mood is, but it all comes out when you're really present with people you trust and you're singing.
Yeah.
So that's really fun, and I look forward to meeting and playing with more musicians who value improvisation as part of the relationship.
It's because music is and has been so much of your life, you know, not that you're as you near the end. But the music therapy is a ton of school as well as then the actual practical application of that work, and then being a writer and performer, and you've put out several albums and clearly put a lot of time into it. Those are all really demanding things, sort of demanding fields of work, but I know you have the rest of your life. I wonder about how much of your... Do you feel like you have parts of your life that exist outside of your creative expression? Even just sort of your social and personal relationships? Or does that all feel like it blends and intermingles and you don't... You know, you talked sort of about liking the idea of a part-time job that is a job and you can go do that thing and complete some tasks. And some feel that doneness that you never get from creative work.
Correct.
So I'm curious if part of that is because you haven't had any separation in your life.
You know, I would say that for many years it has been mostly integrated, and even the people I'm hanging out with come to my performances or really know that part of me, and so there's not been a lot of separation. And I'd say since I moved on from my music therapist job, you know, it was a really challenging year for me personally and professionally, moving out of my identity and a role I really clung to as a music therapist. And it was very significant for me to not be doing that and to be moving more towards creative freelance work. And what I realized is that I did want more balance at that time, and I'm actively cultivating more balance, and I love going for walks and doing yoga and dancing and meeting new people and developing other skills, you know, catching other kinds of foods in my mouth and just really diversifying.
That's all you
know,
you
my
do.
Skills are just
endless. Are they all that same shape, or are you trying to mix it up?
Right. You know, I'll mix it up.
Yeah. French fries? That's dangerous.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I think that just having that diversity is really important. And I took a pottery class last year, and I've just been giving myself permission to really discover who I am outside of music. And music is a really big part of my what makes me happy, but I really do value that balance and separation. And I'm also realizing that I would rather play gigs here and there that I'm really intending and really ready for, rather than just trying to stay busy as a creative, because that's what you do. And you just grab the next gig because it's there and it pays. And I'm really putting intention into what my values are as a performer right now and what feels good, and curating my own shows instead of just seeing what comes in or who asks me to do what.
But what will that do to your personal brand?
Right. You know, I'm putting my personal joy before that right now. And I really trust the process. It's like every time I do that or I turn something down and I get more intentional, more opportunities that are right in line with that just show up. And so there's a real trust I'm cultivating with my own intuition about, I don't want to be singing five nights a week. I would much rather miss singing for a couple of weeks and then set up a show. And I think that makes me a more potent performer And I want to be an artist who models self-care and who can say, hey, I have this other part-time job and I'm committed to being an artist. And also, I love getting to bed on time. I love having a home base and going to friends' events and not being consumed by this kind of starving artist or just this hunger that I think a lot of creatives feel they need to live in. I really want to live well and have my art be a part of that. But I don't want to put all my pressure on my creativity and my creative spirit to make money and keep going and running ahead.
So. Yeah, it seems like there's some real value in kind of pushing down the fear of missing out thing.
Yeah.
That then creates space for you to not miss things that are actually worth not missing.
Yes, exactly.
Where you might miss a bunch of stuff that, who cares if you missed it, you know.
Right.
You weren't missing anything.
Yeah. And this concept of, you know, strategies versus tactics. So I think how we are connected is through that Giant Steps Conference for entrepreneurial creatives and creative entrepreneurs. And
well said.
Thank you. I love their tagline. I was part of a workshop with Tim Foss and Brian Karoff this past fall, and it was about being a brilliant creative strategist, because it looks like a lot of creatives are so good with tactics, those day-to-day, okay, I'm going to engage my email list, I'm going to do this, I'm going to book these gigs, I'm going to respond to these emails, I'm going to work on the production for this album, kind of right in front of you to do things, and that few creatives have mastered that, as well as the bigger strategy of where is my ship headed and all of these tactics I'm doing, because in 3 years I want to be doing this and I know these things are connected to that and I'm always going in that direction that I've clarified for myself, rather than just put out all the fires, keep going, do everything
right.
Myself. Learning about that and kind of helping teach a little bit of that this year has been great for my own learning, because I do want to be more strategic. And I think it's so easy for me to get caught up in my addiction to productivity, to be like, wow, I'm getting so much done. I responded to like 100 emails this week. And it's like, but when did I last write a song for fun? Or like, is that any closer to Austin City Limits? No, that's just like doing what's here, you know?
Yeah.
So strategy isn't that intuitive for me, that long-term strategy. So I've been getting some help from people who really, their brains really do work that way, about why am I doing this and where am I going, and wherever I'm going involves great balance and deep enjoyment of what I'm doing. So that's really my focus right now as an artist, and that's way more important than making sure my name is in city pages as often as I need it to be, you know.
Right.
And I respect artists who are going at all paces, but for me that's just what's right for right now.
Yeah, if you love the hustle's great.
Right, and it was for so many years.
Yeah.
I mean, I loved it. But then I got burnt out, and now I'm kind of just reapproaching my creativity in a nicer way for myself.
Well, so maybe this is related. How do you manage your time?
Mm.
Do you have a bunch of actual tools do you use? Have you reconfigured time management as you've tried to scale back the obligatory overscheduling?
Yeah. I would say that I love freedom and improvisation and rebel against most structure. And then what I learned this year is like, well, I actually really do need structure to survive as a human. So I'm excited about part-time work and just the built-in structure of that, and what it will offer is a more limited window to work on my stuff, because when there is limited time or the pressure of a deadline or a goal, I will always meet it. And if it's ambiguous, just open time, I struggle in that setting. So time management-wise, I use a Google Calendar. I set goals for myself. I set an intention each day. The intention of how I want to feel and how I want to treat myself and other people in the world always happens. I'd say 7 out of 10 things on my list happen. And then the other 3, I move to my to-do list for the next day. And then I do that for about a year until I realize those things never needed to be on my to-do list in the first place. So still figuring it out and looking at new tools all the time about what will really work for me. And in some ways I feel like I've had this music business for 10-15 years, but it's never been my main focus, and I'm just now taking the time away from a job to really think about, oh, do I want to get a software that can manage all my invoices and scheduling, and oh, do I want to work with a booking manager, how do I really want to set this up for best results.
Yeah.
Just getting more organized.
Seems like an endless game.
It is, yeah.
Organizing and reorganizing.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have specific mentors or teachers, I'm still always searching for the right word, because some people hate the word mentors or the idea of it, but the way you talk about human relationships seems like you really value that.
I do.
So I'm curious about both informal and formal mentor, mentee, teacher-student relationships.
Yeah.
And what that's, if you can pinpoint some specific, like, this has meant a lot to me, and how you think about that stuff.
So I've sought out, you know, professionally, Springboard for the Arts has been a great resource.
I've heard of them.
Imagine that. You know, from artist consultations to just help with healthcare and taxes and other things that can be a little overwhelming for newly self-employed people. They've been a great resource. Informally, my fiancé, Josh, is an amazing business mind and creative.
Well played.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Nailed it down. He has had several businesses and is just an incredible encouragement, and he also has a lot of knowledge. So I'm always leaning on him and his knowledge of small business management and just finding inspiration in the way that he does his business. And then Barbara McAfee, who's an amazing local artist, and now she travels and she's written a book and she does full voice coaching. She did a TED Talk, and she's a friend of mine who I just feel like kind of a sister in song to her, and she's been doing her own business for about 25 years. And I look to her a lot as someone who is really blazing their own trail, and I just think she's having a hell of a lot of fun doing it. And then my sister is great with strategy, with marketing, with intention, and she's just a beast at getting things done, and also kind of questioning, like, oh, why would you do this if where you're going is there? Let's relook at that and give some immediate options. And then one other person that comes to mind is Vikas Narula, who is the person who introduced me to Giant Steps. He's a friend, and he taught a small business management class.
He's started several businesses, I think.
Yes, yeah. He has Key Hubs. Yeah. He's an amazing human being who's one of my closest friends, and he also taught this, it's kind of purpose-driven entrepreneurship meets small business management at MCTC this past fall. And I took that class because I wanted to learn more about the nuts and bolts of business, but also just because it was something he was doing and I knew it would be valuable.
Yeah.
So he is a great friend and mentor, and is someone who has really walked the walk of moving from the working world into a passion-driven business.
Right. A lot of what he talks about is making sure, even if it's money-generating ideas, it's built on your values.
Yes.
And what you want to put into the world.
Yeah, and then it's about the love.
Yeah.
And so it's been really fun hearing him, you know, speak on that topic and just live a life that's really based in love.
Those are all good.
Yeah, that's who I want as a mentor, you know?
Do you see yourself already, and do you give thought to your sort of leadership opportunities? I mean, some of it for me is just, I have a 10-year-old daughter, so almost any time I see a woman who's doing creative work, and, you know, you're an entrepreneur, you're running your own business, so I'm always like, you're a role model, I don't know how much you're thinking about it. So is, I think, boiled down to as much as, like, the young people who come see you perform, or to much more concrete examples of you offering teaching or offering guidance for other people. Is that something that you get excited about and that you do already?
Yeah. It's a part of what I do. And certainly I'm 29. I mean, I'm still learning
a
lot.
You're young. Yeah.
And also I have a ton of life experience for the age I am.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I have been aggressively pursuing the things I love since I was a baby. And so I have found myself in positions of being a consultant and a teacher and a mentor and a coach to other artists, to other people who are considering music therapy, to people who are starting their own business and want some tools, to people who are trying to find the confidence to charge for their services in a consistent way. I've done some keynote speaking. I've created workshops and I like helping people make vision boards about their best lives. So I have done some of that. I've been hired in some workplaces to do staff bonding activities. I've been a speaker and facilitator at different retreats and conferences. And I've also worked with youth a bit in just encouraging them to pursue a career that sounds really fun and meaningful.
Yeah.
So any chance I have to offer those parts of myself that feel valuable to people who are open and learning, I'm happy to do that. And I also offer consulting professionally to artists who are getting started and want to do like a series about how to start playing gigs and how to build up their confidence and how to set intention for their career.
We've actually been talking for almost an hour now.
Okay.
Sort of lost track of time because this is great. But so one thing I was curious about is the idea of like missteps or mistakes or things that didn't go as you expected and maybe it led somewhere great, or maybe it just helped inform you for the future. Mm-hmm. Like you said, you're not even 30 yet, but I know you've had a lot of experiences just hearing you talk and looking at sort of the story of you that exists on the internet. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious if you have a time or two, could be something tiny, could be something monumental that has informed your work or that turned out in a surprising or different way.
Yes, I would say first thing that comes to mind is just there were so many failures and challenges of this first year of being jobless.
Is a lot of that just financial insecurity, or is there personal, like,
it's financial self-worth? was a piece of it, but really it was about changing my relationship with my creativity. So let's say my muse is like a person that's my teammate that's always working with me and has always been available to me when I've asked. And then I changed my relationship with my creativity by being like, you need to start making me money. You need to take this gig, even though it doesn't sound that much fun. You need to do this. You need to drive harder. You need to work harder. Your workday isn't done until I say it's done. You know, this, the kind of distress of the transition of becoming a creative who's relying solely on creativity to make life happen was a pressure that ultimately really burned out my creativity even farther. And I was just reading Elizabeth Gilbert's Big Magic.
How is that?
Incredible.
I like her a lot.
Please,
I haven't read that.
Buy it and have it forever. It's so good. And she talks about how she feels concerned when people quit their day jobs to put all the pressure on their creativity. And she talks about how she's committed to writing every day. Even when her first three books sold, she kept her day job and wrote every day just so that she would never put that kind of pressure on her creativity. And as I was reading that, I thought, that's exactly what I did. And in that way, I feel like it's just a step to honor myself, not just financially, but just so that the part of me that is here to just create and enjoy doing that and offer it to other people feels more free to do that instead of having to take the gigs that don't really fill my soul. That's not good for anybody, you know? And it's really important to me that I'm doing work that fills me and fills other people. So that was just something I did that I really learned from, but that definitely compromised my ability to create and feel joy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it hard to identify for a while?
It was, yeah. And I kept pushing and wondering, why isn't this working? And maybe I'll just keep responding to emails. And maybe I'll just keep...
Just power through.
Maybe I'll just try to play more gigs. And maybe I'll just talk to other people who are suffering. And I was like, no, this should be more fun. The whole point was to enjoy this part of my life more. So I'm really returning to my values with that and realizing that balance is a big need.
Yeah.
So. And I think a lot of people might who do decide to quit their jobs to pursue creative stuff might do it in a way that's going to part-time and then going to a couple hours, or they have a set runway, and I'm a leaper. So I did not set it up in that way, which is just true to who I am. But in a lot of ways, I can see that I did that at the same time as moving in with my partner, as renovating a fourplex from the ground up, as starting a business for the first time as my only source of income was simply silly. It was so stressful to do all that at once. So I would be kinder to myself and do a little more spaced out transitions if I could in the future.
I don't know what it is, but I want you to start something called Simply Silly.
Simply
that
Silly.
Is, that is a great alliterative phrase.
Yeah. It's like, I could choose a lot of judgmental words, but really at the end of the day, it's like, that's hilarious that I thought that would be easy or smooth.
Well, that's the other thing you're touching on, though. Even if you identify that being gentle with yourself about that sort of, oh no, this isn't quite right.
So, yeah.
Because it's easy to spend another 3 months just being mad at yourself.
Oh my gosh, yes. And those saboteurs will just come out and try to defeat you in those times of change, you know, those kind of defeating voices. But there's some quote that I love to remember that is, you know, you've never been to this part of your life before. How could you know how to do it right away? It's like, just that compassion is so important for empathic and creative people.
Yeah, because you shouldn't make any mistakes ever.
Right. Right. It's like, I actually prefer to improvise. Why am I forcing myself to have a plan right now?
Yeah.
It's okay.
This isn't the improvising time. Mm-hmm. You didn't set it up. It's got to be all very predicted.
Right.
That's really wonderful. And I need to buy that book. It's already several people.
Oh, please, everyone do it. Yeah.
She's
great.
She's been doing a podcast built on.
I've been listening to that podcast. Yeah. Yes.
And she has a surprising sense of humor that I didn't know about before she started appearing on other podcasts and being really funny and charming.
Yeah, she is charming.
So that's the endorsement. Everyone go check out Elizabeth Gilbert.
Yeah.
But for Lynn O'Brien stuff, where can people go to find out when you have shows coming up, buy albums, get other services from you?
Yeah.
Where do you send folks for that stuff?
Yeah, I have a pretty comprehensive who I am offering on my website, which is lynnobrienmusic.com. And there's also Lynn O'Brien Music on Facebook. And through the website, they can contact me directly if they have any other creative ideas or want to chat. But there you can find custom songwriting, and you can also listen through to and read all the lyrics for my recorded music. And music is also on iTunes.
Cool. So. Well, thanks for talking to me, Elena.
Yeah,
I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
You can find me on Twitter at @ThatLevi. You can find the show at @PrattFallsPod.